We're so glad to welcome Senator Jeff Hawley. He represents the 6th District, serving communities of Airway Heights, Cheney, Fairchild Air Force Base, Medical Lake, parts of Spokane, talking about a bipartisan bill sponsored by the senator that would help address Washington's nursing shortage. And I think we've got some good news here. So, Senator, we want to welcome you to the program today.
Well, thank you, Tim. Much appreciated. Give me a chance to talk about this. I'm kind of excited about this bill.
Yeah. Well, let's why don't you share what the bill is and where things are at currently with it.
Wow. Well, let's. I'll start with some background here. You know, we've had a nursing shortage since I walked in the door in 2013, and it seems it's become aggravated further and further to the point where. Some of the areas that probably didn't get a lot of attention from the nursing community before, the RNs, for example, the positions are filled by licensed practical nurses, LPNs, have deteriorated to the point where it's critical status. Even the president of the leading organization for nursing homes in the state recently described the staffing shortages as having reached crisis proportions. So we have tried everything over the last number of years here, placing grants to provide some sort of a equivalency or equilibrium in education funding for teachers out there, somewhere near what they would have made in the private market. Stipends, for example, that to attract preceptors for the clinical hours and the rotations that the nurses have to do, part of being licensed, and even loan forgiveness programs in some of the rural areas out there to attract people to areas that probably don't have the cash flow to pay, competitive wages. Maybe some of the larger cities would. Out there. What we're doing is we've been chasing rather than trying to solve the symptoms of an underlying problem. The underlying problem is that we have nurses that on the front end, first of all, that are interested in a program, can't find space to get into a program, maybe an inadequate supply of nurses, nursing programs on the front side, and an absolute, just almost a dying off of LPN programs, licensed practical nurse programs, outside of a couple of small private schools in the state here over the last 10, 15, 20 years, to the point where we need to restructure some things. Now on the front end, that's part of the problem. The problem is the number of nurses we have, supply and demand simply. On the back end is that we are burning out the nurses we have, and we have a problem with maybe people retiring or just a normal attrition to other positions or quitting their jobs, for something else that is quite not so demanding at this point. And so we're in kind of a crisis mode now. What I wanted to do with this bill, Senate Bill 5582, is put together something that would address the underlying problem. And in doing that, boy, did I find out there's an awful lot out there that I'd have to address to change a lot of different small parts that would help increase the stream, the pipe flow of nurses in the state here and ramp up production proportionally.
Now, so if I'm hearing you right, Senator, you're saying the underlying problem is an access issue. Folks, there's people out there who would be interested in becoming nurses, but really accessing the training and the ability to see that be actualized is the problem.
That is probably a large component. Nothing in life is ever simple like this. Have just something that's straightforward. We fix one thing and it fixes it. But that's a huge component you just described. For example, last year we had about 3,200 applicants statewide for all the nursing positions that are available. Both CTC, community technical colleges, and four-year schools out there that were turned away from the program because there was not space available. So that tells you something about the interest that could be out there that we're not letting people in and fill in the pipeline. So what I wanted to do is rather than try and just go play the long game and say, let's get all the four-year schools to ramp up a Bachelor of Science in Nursing program, I'm looking at community and technical colleges, which have a two-year program, and when they get through the program, the process actually allows them to qualify for licensing through the Nurse Quality Assurance Commission that the same as four-year students do right now. And this is all about solving a problem we have right in front of us. It's dramatic. It's crisis proportions. What do we do to start filling the pipeline? So I'm going to focus on CTCs to start off with here, to where we create an enhancement of a pipeline. A couple different things I ask for. As I ask the CTCs to develop a plan to train more nurses, they'd have to get back to us by the end of the year, next year. And it has to prioritize expanding existing programs and creating new ones. So it's telling us what they can do with what they have to work with here and new ideas they have. And one of the other things we're talking about, you know that in the last year or so here, a couple of years, we put together a baccalaureate degree allowing community and technical colleges to allow computer 4-year degrees at community technical college level. We're also going to explore possibly doing that if we have the healthcare facilities available with the nursing program. So we're trying our darndest to accelerate programs out there, not just increase existing programs, but accelerate the production on that and see if we can't have a chance at keeping up with the attrition rate in the back end.
Now, you're talking about allowing, you know, folks to kind of go through the community college route. Should folks feel apprehensive about that in the sense of if I go, you know, to the hospital or whatever and I'm talking to a nurse, I'm like, oh, she had less training than previously. Is there an issue perhaps there?
Oh, no. See, this has been the standard for years. You don't know the nurse. Everybody passes the same exam. That's not the problem. Everybody has equal qualifications outside of specialty and enhancements, you know, or higher levels of certification. Everybody in basic nursing has to meet the criteria. That's not an issue. Matter of fact, CTCs for decades have produced nursing students. If you remember Spokane, they used to have the intercollegiate nursing exchange where you had all the 4-year schools in Spokane, but you also had the community technical colleges, Spokane Community College, and Spokane Falls Community College, processed everybody through for the clinical hours together. This is something that's not novel. It's not new. This is something that currently exists now. We're just seeing that as probably the best way to quickly respond to a crisis, Matt.
Okay. Was there something that happened? You mentioned how this really started to increase maybe around 2013, the nursing shortage. What was there something that happened around that time period that really catapulted this into action?
Tim, I have to smile with something like that because I guess I'm right in the middle of the problem. It's called the baby boomers. You know, I'm serious. The median age for a nurse here is, you know, pushing 50 years old. We're early 50s right now. And if you look at the top of the bell curve for the baby boomers, 46 to 64, that's 55. 1955, that makes 68 years old. You start looking at the number of people that are going to start retiring out of the profession here, and it's an over the top of the bell curve at this point. We're going to have a dramatic number of people start leaving the profession. It has nothing to do with issues within the profession, although that's a separate issue we have to discuss. But I'm just saying it has to do with just sheer numbers and demographics in front of us.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's I'm sure there's folks probably concerned in perhaps other industries. Who probably similar issues in other industries, right? With boomers and getting ready to retire and some of the workforce shortage that we have. Maybe some people aren't interested in certain professions. Is that something we're seeing in other critical industries like this?
You are asking the right question. You picked up on that really quickly. You know, the funny part is I've been the ranking member on the Higher Education and Workforce Development Committee that catches both the educational aspect and the workforce development aspect here. We are seeing probably in the last 20 years before I got here, but we're seeing a downward trend in the number of people entering the trades. I'm talking about HVAC, electricians, plumbers, pipe fitters, carpenters, and that not a lot of people are looking at those areas for careers. And the interesting part is I'm not sure, we've had talk about this, that, you know, maybe some of this is a Kennedy era holdover that there's kind of an attitude out there, if you don't have a 4-year degree, you know, it's a non-starter. But quite frankly, when you talk about the quality of job security, the standard of living you have, the people always going to need all of those professions. I mean, it's not something that's economy, you know, dependent, for gosh sakes. All these things come into play. And by the way, when you go through an apprentice program, they pay you and you don't end up with student loans. Then you end up making, you know, equal money you'd probably make with half the bachelor degrees out there, you know, within a 5 to 10 year period, and you're up and running in something that maybe your skill set is learning different ways than for example, you know, textbook learning or you know, a typical, you know, postbaccalaureate degree would provide. So, I mean, yeah, that's a great piece of insight to ask that. But, yes, across the board, you're matching everything up the same. It seems that a lot of the technical fields out there, because so many boomers are retiring on that, you know, that and you have a little bit of a swale in there, and then the millennials coming behind us at this point just have not quite had interest in the same areas. So, yeah, we're scrambling to fill positions.
Yeah, and I would imagine we're probably seeing this acutely more with nursing in particular because of what happened with COVID. And then just some, I mean, here in the state of Washington, you know, our governor, you know, with the vaccine mandate, there were some, I don't know how many, I'd be curious if you know this, Senator, how many nurses in the state of Washington were essentially fired because they didn't get the vaccine?
I haven't looked at that number. You know, I probably should to find out if there's a correlation there, some part of this. But this the problem was going on long before COVID came along,
sure,
though, the decline there. And it's sort of a demographic-driven issue or generational-driven issue, I think, as much as anything. That, like anything out there, you have things come along that create bumps, you know, on the statistical basis that, you know, that could have an impact. But this is, I think it's more of a general trend and a problem that that we're looking at here, that we're trying to say, hey, these are some really good skill sets. These are some, you know, the what you're going to do is going to be fulfilling. And quite frankly, it's lucrative too. And and to attract people back to, you know, some of the areas out here. And quite frankly, you know, I mean, I have to laugh. You know, a long time ago, it's kind of a standing joke, but not really a standing joke. People ask me, you know, I said, Holy, why'd you go to law school? And I said, organic chemistry. You know, and it just, you know, Tim, if you've ever taken organic chemistry, you know what I'm talking about. It's one of those things that is an absolute mountain to climb that you get, you know, you're a week into that and you go, are you serious? There are people a lot smarter than me out there that actually in health sciences, they all have to climb that mountain. And these people are good enough to do that. These people are good enough to have these positions on that. So it's just, there's so much that we have to do, I think, to not just create a pipeline for these things, but to get the conversations back with the high school counselors so people are talking about these areas, you know, that the students are thinking about, bringing them in front of them so they actually, you know, they're aware of what's available out there. And quite frankly, you look at something like this long term, and I think that we're going to have to address a lot of different levels, not just increased college, you know, participation or access or availability or students in the pipeline. One of the thoughts is that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are certified nurses assistants, nurses aides. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to have the CTCs look at creating a pipeline so that we can actually have an apprenticeship program as a nurse's aide that evolves into a licensed practical nurse, you know, an educational corridor for them. So, I mean, there's a lot of things they're trying to do here to create different people who have an interest in the field that they would have access to moving up in the field at the same time. Not just one size fits all. I'm trying to cover a lot of different areas.
We're talking to Washington Senator Jeff Holy. We'll take a quick break here on Live from Seattle, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Live from Seattle. Thanks so much for being with us today. Thanks to Washington Senator Jeff Holy. He represents the 6th District, serving wonderful parts of our state, Airway Heights, Cheney, Fairchild Air Force Base, Medical Lake, and parts of Spokane, and talking about a bipartisan bill that he sponsored to bring our nursing shortage to the forefront and bring more nurses into the state of Washington. It's Senate Bill 5582, aiming to increase the number of nurses in the state by reducing barriers and expanding educational opportunities in that field. And Senator, where are things currently at with this bill?
Well, where most things sit this time of the session, we've got policy cutoff. So policy issues will be done at the end of the week here, and we'll end up have fiscal cutoff, which is the money attached to those policy issues, the following week. And so everything pretty much until the Ways and Means, which is the money committee, starts hearing all these issues over the next week or so, week and a half, we'll sit there waiting to get queued up. So I will probably have a lot more to tell you about But any thoughts the Ways and Means Committee may have, you know, if there's a price tag attached to it, you know, how attractive that is to them to show return on investment, you know, in a week and a half down the road. And by the way, I'm a kook, so I'm pathologically optimistic by nature. So I'm looking for the best out of this one.
I love Oh, my goodness.
You're laughing like you're asking, Tim. Come on, don't do that.
No, I'm not. I'm just, I've never heard it described in that beautiful way before, Senator. So I just, that's just a great descriptor.
Oh, God. Well, Tim, I've had season tickets for football at Wazoo and Pullman for about 25 years plus. And so it's just like, you know, it's just sunshine or snow, you know, we're down there, you know. Love the school kind of thing. And quite frankly, you know, everybody over here is really interested in this bill, you know, on the east side of the mountains. I'm getting a lot of talk and chatter locally about it, you know, the potential this brings.
What kind of pushback are you getting, Senator?
You know, actually nothing on this. So we're, you know, we're having some of the people out there asking that I refine some of the agencies involved, refine responsibility and some of the revenue corridors on this, but you know, substantively, not a heck of a lot. You know, it's more a matter of procedurally they're asking to have things so that they flow, you know, as they currently do versus, you know, disrupt things. But you know, that's what happens when you're somebody like me that looks at things from 20,000 feet and tries to assemble something like this. And people come up and tell you, that lane doesn't quite work like this. This one like this, and these integrate like this. And so, you know, they help me to refine this so it works well within the system.
Yeah. So you feel optimistic that this thing is going to go through and we'll see a successful outcome.
So that's now you're asking another one of those pressing questions. Here's the thing is if it gets through the Senate, you know what happens? It goes over to the other side. It's bicameral legislature here. That means it starts from zero and the other side is the past Senate bill and they go through the whole process again as we do with their bills coming over. You know, the week after next, and go through the whole process again, and completely vet them, completely process them. So sometimes what I start out with is not what I end up with as it gets to the end line with the Senate. But you send something over from the Senate to the House or the House to the Senate on crossover, and that you know it goes through the whole process again. Maybe what we start out with comes back in an altered form, and that altered is probably a really polite way of saying it. Sometimes it's dramatically different. So let's see what happens with this. I think the idea is pure enough and straightforward enough, and the need is recognized enough that we should be somewhat close to where we started.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, you also have another bill to help communities hire more officers.
Tim, you've been doing your homework. I'm a retired Spokane police officer, and I did, you know, it's like 22 years a police officer. I've been, 33 years an attorney now, and 11 years as a politician. I got three reasons for you not to like me before I walk in the door, you know. I'm teasing you here. But, you know, the funny part is that I've seen what's happened. You know, I started, you know, running up on 40 years ago as a police officer. And I retired in 2006, and so my world that I knew as a police officer was a different acceptance and a different perspective, a different view than today's world. And I'm trying to figure out because so many people have gone to smaller departments, gone out of state, that were eligible for retirement, retired. That maybe, you know, having to do with some of the issues out there that, you know, some of the legislation that's passed recently, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, whatever, but, you know, you know, ideas have consequences and some of the decisions, you know, driving, people leaving the profession, you know, are in front of us. And so I'm trying my darndest to create a pipeline again where there's a backlog. For example, you know, we have, you know, in Burien have a police academy on the west side and Spokane on the east side, both of them state academies. They'll run maybe a maximum of about 15, 16 a year. I'm pumping that up to 25 a year. And quite frankly, I had the executive director of the Criminal Justice Training Commission, Monica Alexander, express interest in adjusting and creating some regional academies out here and bumping that up a little bit more. So everybody understands the staffing ratio. We're 51st in the country. We're District of Columbia, when there are, you know, a number of police officers per thousand here at this point.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's need. It's not the total solution, but man, you have to have the people there as a start, you know, to deter, to respond, to help when people in trouble. And when your house is burglarized, you need to have more than tell you to call in a report to Crime Check. I mean, that is disenfranchising in so many ways for public safety. We need to have an adequate staff out there to do the job. And again, rather than addressing the symptomatic issues out there that we have in so many ways, let's go back to fundamentals and see if we can't start to solve the underlying problem, which is a lack of police officers. And yeah, interestingly enough, with everything I just talked about, there's a backlog of people trying to get into the academies up to 18 months. We've got state statutes out there that say that technically you're supposed to enroll in an academy within 6 months of being hired for one of the certified police departments. We're about 18 months out to find space in an academy cycle at this point. So we're trying to fill the pipeline up there too. Maybe you perceive a little bit of a common theme between the nurses and the police officers, Bill.
Hmm. Well, I tell you, and again, you're going to have, I think, some of the temptation, and we saw this in Memphis where, police officers and agencies are tempted to limit some of the training so that they can get officers in sooner and create a pipeline. I mean, here in Seattle, we're down 525 officers from a few years ago. I mean, that's a third of the force. That is incredible. And again, the temptation to try to, just push people through, but we're in this double-edged sword, right? Because folks are saying, hey, we got to make sure that officers in this day and age are trained up. And yet at the same time, they're, the morale is about as low as you can get in a lot of the agencies. And how do we do this?
Why don't you just ask me something simple, like how are we going to have world peace? I mean, come on, Tim, if I was on a stand after all these years, I'd stop you and I'd say, well, counselor, which one of those questions you want me to ask, answer first? you got a bunch going there. So yes, you addressed a bunch of different issues out there, that are all intersecting, which goes to show that everything we deal with in Olympia here is, I don't know, it's complex almost to the point of absurdity. There's never anything that's just simple, ABC kind of a problem anymore. I don't know, because you have everything out there. You have to change from the culture with the departments to the training with the departments. The other part is that, with what's gone on the last number of years here, you're maybe deterring people that might have been interested otherwise, from applying to the departments. And you and I both know, if you've been, looking at this at all, that the number of people that apply for positions available from say 25 years ago, is probably 50 to one, down to about 2 to 1. I mean, it's 3 to 1. It's not that you need to have the ability to have a position out there that is professional, but it attracts the right kind of people, and the people you write are trained up correctly and have the right skill set, the right tools, but, have the right supports out there too. And know that if they do the right thing and respond according to training, that the public and the department will have their backs. That they're not going to be subject to political whims. That there's a bright line standard out there, that if they operate by this code, they're going to be okay. There's so many different parts out there that are moving under our feet the last couple of years. With some of it's with the legislation that's come out of the legislature, but. Some of it has to do with the culture around policing environment too. So you're asking a question, you're kind of hitting in the right area, but man, that's a six pack of beer conversation to even touch that.
Let's get into keg territory here, Senator.
go for gold.
so it's been said over the last couple of years here in the West Coast that, our homelessness crisis is because we have these, Democrat run cities here along the West Coast, Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, LA. And I've tended to believe that, because I've seen these policies in action, crippling our cities. However, then I went to Spokane last week, and I started to reevaluate that position. Please talk about that.
You know, I don't think anybody out there in government at any level does anything maliciously. I think everybody brings different skill sets and perspectives to the table, and different expectations, maybe agendas even at this point, or ideas, tools in their toolbox about how to solve problems. And I think sometimes they don't match up exactly with what the problem needs to be resolved. If I was to go back farther, you know, I'll make you smile on this, but there's, you know, when I grew up, I'm maybe older than I sound. When I grew up in the Renton Highlands between that and Issaquah, I mean, we were you know, a blue collar town, packed car, Todd shipyards, you know, I mean, you had Boeing was a big dog, you know, the dock workers, that kind of stuff. It was just kind of a laid back blue collar town. Things changed through the '70s into the '80s. And the demographic changed, but the culture changed with it. You notice a packed car, there's no foundry in Renton anymore. You know, Boeing, you know, where's the plant down at the bottom where they have the landing in Renton now? I mean, all these things have downsized and outsourced it to different states in the country. You know, maybe right-to-work states, this kind of thing, whatever drives them there. But the point is that, you know, as you take away all those jobs out there that a guy could get a GED and go out and still make an adequate living, you know, all of these things go away, and you find 40, 50, 60% of the jobs available out there require post-secondary certificate, a degree, education, accreditation, this kind of thing. I think there's an XY there someplace that we're running into that we probably hadn't anticipated so many years ago. And the problem is like, how do we go back and start moving the other direction and accommodating some of the issues that we've overlooked or the problems we've created? Tim, I don't have the answer to that. I see the problem in front of me, and I see issues out there where you have the dynamics that are approaching them from bipolar viewpoints. Ozzy Nezovich, the Spokane County Sheriff, you can exercise emergency powers and do what's necessary to reduce the crime in the surrounding radius around Camp Hope in Spokane. And you had a group of local attorneys from a local law firm, public interest law firm, put together a court order in federal court, you know, that would stop that. So I mean, there's so many different things come into play. Nobody seems to be acting maliciously. I think they're approaching the problem from probably bipolar points of view as to what the right outcome is. So to ask you a question, if you could tell me exactly what the right answer or solution is, that'd give everybody a chance to have something to aim towards. And quite frankly, I don't think you can come up with that answer because everybody else is still struggling with it too.
Yeah. Wow, Senator, that was I'm not sure what you just said there, but we'll try to play that one back and I'll try to interpret that.
The problem's at 20,000 feet and it's 20 years in the making. You can't have just one thing turn back and say, we'll just make this one thing change and then everything will be the same as 20 years ago. When you have so many different moving parts moving forward, that's never the case. And like Imprimis, you know, Hillsdale College, their newsletter says, you know, ideas have consequences. Sometimes we don't anticipate the long-term impact of the consequences of our ideas. That's what we're living with.
Yeah. Let me ask you another, maybe it's a tough question. Maybe it's easy. Should Nick Rolovich been fired?
Hey, we're supposed to be talking about healthcare nurses. What are you doing?
We're having fun.
Oh, good. You make me smile. So I've had, you know, seats down there since Dobo was there, you know, and quite frankly, Paul Wolf never got that fourth year, you know, and which drives me nuts because he did some decent recruiting. We played, you know, had a 500, ball year, 50% ball year that we played when he was there. And it's just like the leech came in and we had more alumni giving in 2 weeks after he was hired than we had, I think, in any previous calendar year, the last time I checked. I mean, that kind of stuff, you know. So you see, and quite frankly, I think, Rollo was a good coach, but it's like, I don't know what to make of that. I think everybody's kind of panicked. And I think, quite frankly, at the time that Kirk Schultz is in a position the position he'd taken, I don't think he had any other choice. So it's just, I can sit back, you can sit back, any one of us can sit back and armchair quarterback somebody, that was involved in a critical incident, Monday morning after, sitting there watching the TV or, drinking coffee. But the guy involved in the critical incident that happened there, is the one that has to make the decision. So, Tim, I don't know what the heck to tell you on that. I tell you what, Dickert has surprised me here. And quite frankly, this year's Apple Cup, we'll give him a pass. But you go back a year here, we killed it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he's got a lawsuit out. And do you have any particular thoughts about how that might play out?
I tell you what I think is, I think that I've got an omnibus nursing bill in front of me, an omnibus, a police academy bill in front of me, a half dozen other ones out there. And oh, by the way, I've got one that I'm trying to get traction on here, that Western State Hospital has been, in Lakewood, has been reimbursed for police services that are provided by the city to a state institution. And Eastern State Hospital in Medical Lake isn't given the same courtesy, and they're having to eat the cost. That's my next. I mean, if you want to talk about somebody out there that's Don Quixote, that's me and those small issues that really impact district out there that I'm going to go after this one. So I've got other things in front of me other than Cougar football. Come on, it's the off season. What are you talking about?
Well, before we let you go here, if you don't mind, Senator, I do want to ask you about this this bill about the Huskies and Cougars playing in the same conference. You mind if we come? You mind if we come back? And you got 2 more minutes.
Okay, I can do 2 more minutes. Go ahead, Coach.
All right. We've been having a great time with Senator Jeff Holy from the 6th District. He serves communities in Airway Heights, Cheney, Fairchild Air Force Base, Medical Lake, and parts of Spokane. And we appreciate your time, Senator. We've been having a great time digging into some good topics and some tough ones. And speaking of tough ones, there's a bill. Talk to us about this, requiring the Washington Huskies and the Wazoo Cougars to play in the same conference.
So that was rather interesting. Matter of fact, I had some university presidents in my office that were asking about that with raised eyebrow. The two most rabid Cougars in the Senate are Sam Hunt and myself. And Sam, we signed on, both co-signed on that. Both of us consider that a messaging bill. And it didn't get a hearing, which is appropriate for the bill. It was something out there that just sent a message out, and the talk started, and people understood that, yes, when one school does something, it doesn't matter which one it is, does something that affects alumni giving, that affects sports revenue, which some cases in some schools is rather large, and it impacts the other school negatively. You know, the state budget comes into play on that. What we end up having to subsidize for cost education for one school or the other, is a consideration. So, I mean, that's a conversation that happened when I had people ask me about that. And quite frankly, the bill is never going to go anyplace. What it did is get attention, and it brought the conversation. I believe it's a success.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, when USC and UCLA announced they were leaving for the Big Ten or the Big 18 or whatever it is, that was, the fallout from that. Everybody was scrambling. What's going to happen? Is Oregon leaving? Is Washington leaving? Of course, some of the experts, I mean, who really follow this stuff and know, details behind the scenes, really thought the best, solution, or not the solution, but at least probably what was going to happen, was that the Pac-12 would kind of fold, and that teams would move on, and schools like Washington State or Oregon State would probably end up in the Mountain West or something like that, and that the Pac-12 as we know it would be forever gone. And what happened was almost miraculous of sorts, because of course the Pac-12 has been, football wise, has been down for many years and has just been out of the national conversation, which it probably led to USC and UCLA moving on because of the dollar signs and all that. But they just had a massive year, the Pac-12. All these teams had really phenomenal years. And now they're set up this next year for another great year, which could have saved the conference. I don't know. What do you think?
You know, counselor, you took my whole 2 minutes up there. No, I'm serious. I've got an appointment coming up here that I'm a couple minutes late on. Let's just say that I have inside information, and you would make a wonderful police detective, because that was a beautiful lead in there to draw me out on this. And I know more than I can say on that, but I feel good about what's going to happen with the Pac-12. So,
excellent. Well, hey, I appreciate it. Senator Holley, thank you for taking the time and joining us on Live from Seattle today. We hope we appreciate it.
Oh, Tim, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye.